Welcome to The Cards We're Dealt, the podcast that explores what really matters at the end of our lives and how the hell we can begin to talk about it with our loved ones. I'm Crystal Smith, and I'm here with Lisa Paul, a hospice social worker, and Lori LoCicero, a writer and widow, who together with Lisa created The Death Deck. It's a series of questions to inspire and ignite meaningful conversations about death and dying. During each episode of the podcast, we'll use those cards as a roadmap to explore what exactly constitutes a happy ending by asking some of the questions they developed for these cards of our guests. As always, no preaching, no judgment, no limits. For our very first show, we are beyond honored to welcome Stephanie Huckleberry. Lori, I'm going to have you introduce Stephanie since you are the one who brought her to us. And please explain why you thought she should be our very first guest.
Of course, Crystal. Thank you. So I met Stephanie at UCLA when she pledged at my sorority. We were at a football game when I accidentally spilled an entire beer over her head. 20 ounces of ice cold beer in the excitement of our first touchdown. Not on purpose. Instead of getting pissed, she just laughed it off and struck up conversation. That's when I knew. I knew I wanted her to become my sorority little sister. We became close throughout college and stayed in touch a few years after graduation, and then we lost touch. Our reunion would not be easy. Through sorority friends, she found out that my husband had died. This news coming soon after she was diagnosed with stage 4 neuroendocrine carcinoma, an extremely rare cancer. Stephanie showed up at my late husband's celebration of life, a cancer patient with a terminal illness meeting up with a grieving widow. I questioned how much involvement I would want in this rekindled friendship. Could I handle being involved with a friend with a terminal illness? Could I withstand all the pain of watching another person close to me die? Would she want to be around someone currently going through the grieving process, or would that be way too depressing? My inner voice reminded me, there are no coincidences. This reuniting is meant to be. I was drawn to the possibilities of what I might be able to shed light on from my journey and be illuminated from hers. I was also frightened as hell. We decided to give it a go, and are both glad we did. It has turned into a relationship of honest conversations about death and dying, and has provided us both with incredible healing. Throughout her illness, she has continued to work, a blessing, she tells me, to keep her focused on something other than her cancer, continue to have much-needed health insurance, and normalize her world. She has sought alternative treatments in Germany, traveling there with her entire family, including her mother, making the best of her situation. While her doctor never gave her a specific time frame to her terminal illness, she was well aware of the statistics of her particular cancer and had hopes of making it through at least a couple of years after her diagnosis. While she currently lights up like a Christmas tree on her tumor scans and faces continued progression in her disease, Stephanie has faced her illness with strength, grace, and most importantly, humor. I am delighted to report that she has surpassed her own goals of survival and is here with us today. Lisa and I welcome you to our podcast.
Yay!
Yay.
Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Wonderful. Well, we have a couple of questions for you. I will start it off. We would like to know, how did they find your tumor, and what was it like for you to receive that diagnosis?
So I'm actually not a stranger to medical problems. So I was born with spina bifida in a very rare presentation. I was very lucky because it was low down on my spine, and it just affected my bowel and bladder function. But I had been going to doctors, and I had a huge surgery when I was 5 years old. So I was pretty much very, very used to having to constantly go to hospitals and doctor appointments and being pulled out of school. So in my strange mind, I just thought, well, I'm never getting cancer because I've already got this. The universe isn't going to do that to me. So after I had my second child, my OBGYN was just doing I was complaining about having extremely heavy periods. So she was doing an ultrasound and found a tumor. And then when I finally found out it was cancer, It was because I was having double vision, and it already had metastasized into my bones and my liver. And that was just, that was absolutely devastating. So I literally just withdrew, like, for about, I'd say, a good month of just complete overwhelming sadness, grief, every emotion you can think of, extremely angry, because I thought, well, how could this happen to me? Because I've already had all these other problems. Now I get another problem. So yeah, it was absolutely awful in the beginning.
So this seems like a great time to bring in Lisa Paul, our other host, who is also a hospice social worker, who is frantically nodding her head at everything that you're saying, and has more experience with these kinds of situations than all of us combined. What's going through your mind, Lisa?
Yes, I am nodding my head and staring into Stephanie's eyes, thinking, listening to her story and thinking about how it must have seemed like there was no way the universe could grant you another health problem, and mm-hmm. that you probably felt very reassured by the doctors when they told you that this tumor
absolutely.
Was benign.
Yep.
How long of a time frame was it between when you thought that the tumor was benign and then when they discovered the tumor behind your
eye? It was 2 years. So that also made me angry, because that was 2 years where I could have been having treatment.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, we could have maybe contained some of the metastases. So that mm-hmm. that was, yeah, that was a long time.
That's rough.
You were saying that you, that first month. So going back you were talking about the initial reaction when they told you, and then you withdrew for a month.
I did. I withdrew. I was so incredibly, I wasn't myself, actually. I tried to, you know, the doctor sent me to a psychologist, and, you know, I said, this is normal at me. And he said, yeah, I just from looking at you and your face and you're smiling and all this, he said, this is not, I can tell, we don't need to do anything with you. We don't need to put you on antidepressants or anything. You're going to come right out of this. And he was absolutely right. So mm-hmm. I have a very logical mind. I'm a mathematician person. So I sat there and I thought, well, what the heck good is this doing me? You know, sitting mm-hmm. around moping and crying, and I have two little kids that are dependent on me. What this does mean zero good. It absolutely doesn't do any good for anybody, including myself. It's not helping me in any way. Mm-hmm. So that's what I just said that's it. I got to stop this stuff. And that was it. So I just started immediately going on in an upswing from that point, saying, okay, I don't know how much time I have, and I've mm-hmm. got to actually be positive and do something constructive. Because laying around is not constructive.
How old were your kids at that time?
They were so young. So I was a kindergartner, 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. Yeah. So yeah, that was the most devastating part. I am so sad to admit that I really didn't actually think a lot about my husband during this situation, because I mm-hmm. thought, well, he's an adult, he can handle this. You know, I'm worried about the kids. They're mm-hmm. my main concern. So Lori was probably going, wow, you're such a bitch. Because she was the spouse.
Yes. Mm. How dare you, Stephanie? No, and I was going to say, when you said a month, I mean, that seems like such a short amount of time to kind of get into that space and then work your way out of it. So that's very admirable, because when I went through my grieving process, I mean, it was 2 years. Well, so I thought you were going to say at least a year. I mean, a month, come on.
She was on the accelerated program.
It was that logical mind thing, though. It was my brain just saying, this is just absolutely ridiculous. You're serving no purpose doing this. This mm-hmm. is, and it's kind of weird, because every time I will still dip into those, I'll have moments, obviously, that during this whole journey, but they're so short. They don't last very long, because again, I just say, it's just absolutely helping nothing. It doesn't do any good.
Yeah. And at that time, when you were basically given a terminal sentence,
yeah. mm-hmm.
what did you think time-wise that you had left?
Oh, I once it's gone into your bones and, you know, your liver, in most cancers, that is not much time. That's mm-hmm. less than a year.
Usually.
Max 2 years, maybe. But this is such a rare cancer, and people don't really know about it. And, you know, it's thank God for I'm alive because of the internet. I really, honest to God, am alive just because of the internet, because I had to do all the work myself. But when I was first told of what the cancer is, they said, well, there's really no chemotherapies that work on it, and really radiation doesn't do any good. So really, there's really nothing you can do besides surgery. And at that point, surgery is not an option because it's, you know, and all over the place. So I thought, well, that's insane. You know, there's like, what do you mean there's nothing I can do at all? And that was what I was told. So, yeah. So, yeah, it was, it was just very difficult.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you did some treatments in Germany.
Yes.
And you kind of made it a family vacation.
So
can you tell us about that?
So, actually, the first family vacation was Switzerland.
Oh.
Because, yeah, so, again, with the internet, I was researching all over. I am an IT, so I spent hours on the computer, up all at night, you know, just looking at everything I possibly could. And I started reaching out to people with the cancer. And that was amazing because it's amazing how I have friends in Michigan, friends in, you know, Northern California that I've never even seen them in real life. And yet we'll talk on the phone about death and dying and, you know, surgery and, you know, side effects and everything. And so I started learning that really, you know, this cancer is a slower growing cancer. And some people's really are almost benign. Mine is more aggressive. But still, when I say that, and I look at Lori and, you know, having her husband having pancreatic cancer, that's an extremely rapidly growing kind of tumor. And mine is, you know, probably grows at like 25% the rate of that, if that. So it's much, much slower growing. So I thought, okay, now I actually have some time. And I went on the internet and I found these treatments that they were doing. It's not alternative medicine. It's mainstream. So if you're in Europe, this is where they do this right away when you have this cancer. It's a radiation that they attach. It's really scientific. They attach it to a substance that our body makes. It's a hormone our body makes called octreotide, and it's a growth hormone. And for some reason, these tumors love it. They suck that hormone up. So they have all these receptors all over the walls of the tumor. And so what they do is they attach radiation to that hormone and shoot it in your vein as an IV, and it just goes straight to the tumor like a Trojan horse. And I thought, this is incredible. This sounds really great.
It's brilliant.
It's amazing. Yeah. So I talked to my doctor here, and that was the other thing. I found one of the world-renowned experts in the cancer happened to be at Cedars-Sinai. Then I work, you know, 2 miles away from Cedars-Sinai. So that was extremely lucky. And I asked him about it, and he said, it's absolutely a great idea. So I got on board and I first went to Switzerland. So yeah, Switzerland. So I figured, well, you know what? And the side effects aren't that bad. And so I said, well, you know what? I might as well just drag the whole family over there and let's stay for 2 weeks. So the first week I had to do the treatments and stay. You have to be isolated because you're totally radioactive and stay in the hospital. But my husband, my mom, the kids, they're going all over the place, you know, wandering the town, walking. And then they come in to visit me. And, you know, tell me how the day went. And then I got let out. And then the whole next week, we got in a giant van and drove all over Switzerland. And it was so fun. It was so much fun. Yeah. So doing, you have to try to turn some of these things around and, you know, attach fun to things. That's what I like to do also and I'm extremely honest with the kids. They've known from day one that this is really serious. Mom could die. I don't hide anything from them. Nothing. And so, you know, how can I hide it? Like, why are we going to Switzerland and why is mommy in the hospital? It's right. Not going to work. So, I did that. And, those saved my life. Those treatments absolutely saved my life. And now they're mainstream in the U.S. finally. So I had my first injection probably in 2008. I want to say 2009.
10 years ago.
10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've had 5 treatments, and they're all in Europe, but now it's here. And finally in the U.S., you know, it's come. And what makes me so angry is that when I talk to other doctors initially, they said, "Ugh, why would you want to do that? That's something at the very end. That's like a last resort." And I said, "Oh, well, really? It's a last resort? Well, you're not offering me anything else.
There's no other. They've been there. No options.
Yeah.
We're there."
But now all these same doctors are like, "Oh, yeah, that's, absolutely. You do that right away." You know, it's like, I feel like punching these guys. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So can I talk about your kids for just a minute? Because
absolutely. When
you talk about how you don't hide anything from them, I think an important piece is we don't want to paint too rosy a picture of how if you just have positive attitude,
right?
You know, the cancer won't get
you. Oh, no.
And so, and I can tell by how you're talking that that's not how you're approaching it with them. So they've seen you kind of in your moments of,
oh, yeah,
being scared.
Yes.
And
yes.
concerned about leaving them. And you've been able to kind of talk that through with them some.
And they were younger, so kids are so funny because, you know, mm-hmm. I had to drag them to appointments. You know, I didn't have any nanny or help, and I worked at home and it was kind of managing, and I worked part time. I just want to say that too. Some people, they just lose their jobs.
Yeah.
So that's not a rosy picture either. I was very, mm-hmm. very lucky. But the kids are funny because I would take them to a doctor appointment and I'd be in the car crying in the front seat driving home. Mm-hmm. And they're like listening to music and playing games, ignoring me. So you think that the kids are really, really affected, and you know, they're not on our level. They're on a completely different plane. And kids that age, they're very self-absorbed. That's just how kids are.
They are.
Lori knows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you could be like on your hands and knees crying, and they're just like, Mom, I want a snack, you know?
Well, and they only process little bits at a time.
Totally.
So, you know, they can go from, you know, listening to mom crying and feeling sad about it, and then in the next moment, you know, punching their sibling and moving on.
But now that they're much older, which is an absolute blessing for me, it's actually somewhat harder.
Yeah.
Now it's harder.
They're watching.
And my older son, who's extremely angsty, everything bothers him. He's, you know, not a happy-go-lucky child. He's 21.
Okay.
Which I can't even believe I'm saying that, because there were 5 and 8, you know, and he's 21-year-old. I never, ever, ever. And I'm going to be 50 years old next month, which I thought I would never make that.
Yay.
Yeah. So when people are like, oh, God, don't tell my age. I'm like, I'm 50. I'm 50. So, yeah, it's the kids. But the kids have been, and they also saved my life, too, because I had to live for them. You know, they needed a mom. That's all there is to it. And I think everyone I've ever met that has cancer and has children, I mean, it keeps them going. They want to make it to the next event. Mm-hmm. Like another person that I talked to, I just want to see my son's art show. You know, I want to see him present his final project in his college or whatever. So there's always these little, you just have to make little goals that mm-hmm. you want to meet.
It's great incentive.
Yeah. Just little tiny things, little small, anything, even the smallest thing, just something in your mind that, you know, something in the future that mm-hmm. I'm going to go there. I got to do that. That just helps so much.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. So I remember a scare that you had a couple of years back when you were in the hospital. I think it was your second brain surgery.
Yes, number two.
Yeah. You know, why just have one? You can have two. Yeah,
exactly.
And I remember you called me late one night and said, I think this is the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was a tough conversation.
Yes, that was hard. I'm like starting to tear up for that. Yeah, Lori's, I mean, what a friend. So this is when you can find out who your true friends are, really, because I called her, you know, I was having a really rough time. And that surgery, I seriously did not want to live. I did not want to live. After I got, it was so hard. And actually, I found out later from my husband just literally last week, the surgery was in 2011, that I wasn't waking up. And the surgeon was like, this isn't normal. Like, I don't know if she's going to ever wake up. And so I didn't even know that happened.
You were asleep.
I don't know anything. So, yeah. So they once I got home and I was starting to recover, it was such a difficult recovery. And, you know, they come in and they try to assess your brain, you know, activity and how you're doing. And they're giving me simple math problems. I was a math major at UCLA, you know, add 15 plus 8. I couldn't do it. And Lori was in the room and I was like, starting to lose my cookies. And then, you know, literally when I, after that, for like 6 months after that, I hate to even say this is so morbid, but I literally lay there at night thinking, how can I kill myself mm-hmm. without my kids, like without
knowing.
How can I make it like the least morbid, you know, so they don't find me dead or they don't, you know, I mean, that's seriously mm-hmm. what I was thinking.
That was a dark.
It was dark awful. Time. It was mm-hmm. awful. Yeah, that was really, really bad. But then I kept living. So then you say, all right, well, I'm still alive. I got to stop again. Once again, you know, I have to stop because I'm it looks like I'm actually going to be fine. So now I've got to get, you know, you've got to pick yourself back up. But anyway, I was going to say, Lori, when I had that conversation, just got in the car and drove down. So that's a true friend. It's to like mm-hmm. drop everything. I'm coming down and I still have two kids.
So showing up is really means all that much more.
It's huge. It's really, really huge. And I'm a talker and I like to share everything about my illness. I have, nothing's off limits for me.
Yeah, you do. There's nothing off limits. Sometimes I wish there were a few things off limits, but yeah. No, I know all the gory details.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, friends are everything to me, because I have friends like Lori that I can just dump everything on. And they will sit there and they'll listen to it. We'll laugh. You have to have some humor involved here. Mm-hmm. And that also keeps you alive. It keeps you positive. You need to have some supportive friends. Some friends just disappear. Lori will tell you. Mm-hmm. Some people just disappear. You don't hear from them again. It's bizarre. It's bizarre.
People will surprise you both ways.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When I ask you what is the funniest thing, what pops into mind?
It's so funny. You guys are okay. I was gonna admit this right here now, because again, I share everything. So I have a colostomy bag, because I had to have like most of my little old rectum down there cut out. So Lori knows all the gory details about that. I mean, really nasty stuff, right? But here's what she said. This is so funny. I don't know why this pops in my mind. But I was like, God, you know, it's my intestine down there. It's just angry. It's so mad at me. I mean, it's like, this is, you know, I mean, there's painful. And she goes, let's name it. I'm like, what do you mean name it? She's like, we're going to name your intestine. I'm like, what? And she goes, it's colon. instead of colon. I'm like, I literally was falling on the ground. And that pops into mind all the time that I'm like, oh, and she'll say, like, how's Colin doing today? I'm like, Colin's good. Colin's fine. Is Colin sticking out or is Colin in?
Is Colin behaving?
Yeah. I know it's really gross. It's really gross.
It's really great. Thank you for sharing that.
That's actually a trick in psychology, is externalizing the problem. So looking at naming it, calling it something.
Colin means that
it's not you. It's Colin who's doing that.
Some people name their tumors.
Yeah.
They do. They
actually name that tumor.
Name that tumor. I haven't done that. Name the tumor. But yeah, that's funny. I never knew that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know nothing about clinical psychology. Nothing. Yeah.
And you will. Yeah, you're applying it every day.
Who knew?
Talk to Lisa. You'll know more.
Yeah.
So with that experience and sort of looking at death in the face, did that change how you feel about death and your mortality?
Yes, totally.
How?
Yes. So, I really have struggled. I honestly don't know if there's an afterlife. Like, so some people just have this, they know that's it. Mm-hmm. There's an afterlife. I'm going to see my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm seeing mom up there. I'm going to go up somewhere and it's going to be great. I don't know. I honestly will just admit, I really don't know. I struggle. Am I just going to die? That's it. Maybe. And I don't rule that out. Mm-hmm. So I used to be more religious, honestly. I used to be more, I was raised a Catholic. But I used to be, I've actually gotten less religious and more, I'd say, spiritual. Mm-hmm. So to me, I've learned a lot about energy and I feel more like I'm going to become part of like more of a universal energy. And mm-hmm. that is a completely new concept. I thought I was a complete idiot, you know, before this. Like, that's just
no comment.
Too weird.
No, I'm totally with you on that too.
Yeah.
So I don't find you strange to think that.
That's what I think now. So now, I'm also not. I used to be like afraid to die. I'm not afraid to die. I'm not afraid at all, because I, even though I don't know what's going to happen, I'm gone. You know, I'm the dead person. So I may not even be coherent or whatever, you know. So to me, that's easy. The person who dies is the easy part. I don't know why. I mean, most people would think the opposite. It's the people around you that have the hard part. That's the hard part.
Well, you've been working on kind of coming to acceptance with this for...
Oh, it's been so long. Yes.
10, 15 years.
Yeah, so my first, it was like really 2008 when they found the metastases. Mm-hmm. And now it's 2019. So it's, it's come out 11 years. That's a long time, and that's a huge gift. So mm-hmm. it took a while to get to this point. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not, and I want people to understand that, and I feel almost like I'm cheating sometimes, because my tumors are slower growing. You know, this is not breast cancer. This mm-hmm. is not, like, some of these cancers can just be a terrorist. in your body. Mine's not. And so I've had time to get to this point. You know, it's not. So, if, you know, if you think, oh, you're just diagnosed with breast cancer yesterday and you're going to have this attitude. No. It takes a long time. Mm-hmm.
That's why we're doing this show, because we're all going to die.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
News
we're dying.
Flash. Yeah. We're all dying. And we should all be this self-actualized.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That was actually, I'm glad you bring that up, because that's something I never even thought about either, was my own death. Mm-hmm. You know, and I, mm-hmm. you're young. Oh, I'm only 39. I'm not going to die. You know, it's a, whatever. Yeah, someday, 85, 90 years old. Yeah, that's what we all think of. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I lost my dad when he was only 71. And I had these young kids, and I was the year before diagnosis. I honestly think that has partly a little bit to do with the growth of the cancer, because I was so devastated by his death. And I think, you know, your immune system kind of goes down. I don't know. I think that had partly a little bit to do with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I know it's kind of strange. Mm-hmm. But that also got me thinking about death, because my dad died. He just dropped out of a heart attack. Boom. And no one mm-hmm. expected it. So that was really, really, really tough on all of us. And then you sit there and you think, does dad see what I do? You know, is dad still around? Is his energy out there? Well, I don't know. So I started thinking about it when that happened. And then mm-hmm. I got the diagnosis the year after. So that was really a just awful time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember you shared a wonderful sign that you got from him driving once.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I'm surprised you remember that.
Of course I remember that.
God, Lori.
Lori loves signs.
So true. I was driving the family. I don't even know why. Why was I driving? Usually Scott's driving, but I was driving. And we're coming right to, we're almost at our house. And there's a left turn at our house. It's a light. But people come shooting. It's a kind of a canyon. So people come shooting out of that canyon. And I was getting into the left-hand turn lane. I'm sitting there and the light turns green. So there's nobody around. And I start turning left. And out of nowhere, this car just is coming down the road at like 70, 80 miles an hour. And I heard my dad's voice in my head saying, just relax, relax, stop the car, relax, slow down. It's going to be fine. It was weird. I literally heard him. Literally, and didn't see him or anything, but I heard that voice and I just put the brakes on, and otherwise I think we all would have been dead, but I heard him.
Yeah. See, and I'm jealous because I've never had a hearing sign. It's always been visual signs. So
I've never had a visual.
Let me interject and say that we actually chose some cards specifically for you from the death deck. And is this actually the first one, the visitation one? I mean, how perfect of a segue could you ask for? So go ahead. Lisa, you want to ask?
Yeah. So the question is, if you knew you could visit your loved ones after death, how would you make your presence known? And Lori especially wants the answer to this so that she knows what she's looking for. And all of us.
Oh, Lori's going to get, I mean.
You're just going to go bombard her constantly.
Oh, no. It's going to be something totally ridiculous, like putting a pickle or something out in the middle of the table. You know, it's a Garci.
Yeah. You're going to constantly make me spill my drinks on myself.
It's not going to be inspirational. And like,
come on. Give me something.
Oh, my God.
It'll be more like a haunting. Oh, you know what else? But I forgot to mention, because of this, I am like obsessed with those ghost shows. You know, ghost adventures. Mm-hmm. I fully believe this stuff now. Like there's some really, and all those psychic shows, like, what's his name? That cute kid.
The blonde.
Oh, yeah. Hollywood.
Tyler?
Yeah. Tyler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyler, and then remember the Long Island Medium.
Of course.
So I
know that one.
Yeah. What I hope I could do is help them make decisions. Mm-hmm. So I think of my son who's just struggles all the time with what should I do. I would hope that maybe I could send him some kind of energy to like point him in the right direction when they're making a major decision in life. You know, that's something, it's not a sign necessarily, but
a confidence that you can give them.
Yeah.
But I think that's inherent in the sign, because when I get signs from my late husband, it then lets me know immediately, like, okay, you're on the right path. And it's not necessarily pushing me to the right path.
Yeah.
But when I see that at very strategic moments of of course you're going to show up. And yes, thank you. Now I know I'm on the right path. So
he would be omniscient. It's always this idea that if you're a ghost and giving a message that you can see the future, right? Or not just be supportive in the moment. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
What's an example for you, Lori?
Well, it shows up in his name. So I've had a tumor that I've had, which was benign, but I named it Harriet.
Harriet.
Yeah. Was there hair in the tumor?
Well, like it's a dermoid tumor, which I had to look up on the internet, and it's something that could actually have
like
hair and skin and bones. Yeah, it's my little mini-me, and it was hairy, and I called it Harriet. So I didn't know what it was, and I was very nervous going into, it was soon after he had passed, and I became a hypochondriac.
Yes.
It's like, you know, any little thing, and this was not going away, and I couldn't deny it.
I was scared for you.
Yeah, so I was going to get a scan to see what it was. I was very, very nervous.
Yeah.
And I was in the, you know, the waiting room, and I didn't want to come out. And the technician came to get me, and it like knocked on the door, and it's like, okay,
why
come
didn't
out
you ask
now.
Me to come with you?
You know, I didn't.
Were you by yourself?
I was.
Oh God Almighty! What's why did she do that?
I know. I don't know. I know. And I had a
reach out for help, Lori.
Come on.
At least you were busy. No, I'm just kidding.
We're modeling.
Oh, gosh, where was I? Okay.
Good practices here.
Yeah, so, you know, I just was so incredibly nervous. And I was, you know, for sure, okay, now I've got cancer and this is awful.
Oh.
And so the knock on the door, it's like, are you coming out? And like, yeah. So, and I start walking down the hallway, and the technician, you know, reached out his hand and said, you know, I'm Joe.
Oh,
and
geez.
I will be helping you today. And that was my husband's
That's
name.
So freaky.
So, you know, there's been those moments.
Oh, she gets the freakiest stuff.
Yeah. So his name will show up like the first day of a new school, and I'm missing him, walking to the parking lot going, oh, I just wish he could be here with these kids to see this new school.
First day of school.
And I look down on the ground, and someone has dropped a name tag, and it is
Joe.
Hello, my name is Joe.
Yes.
Yeah,
hello,
exactly.
My name is Joe. So, I mean, there have been numerous times where
that's creeping me. I'm getting the chills. She creeps me out.
Years later, the first man who asked me to dance, you know, wouldn't he?
Someone asked you to dance?
Oh, come on.
The first man ever.
First man that ever asked me to dance. And, you know, it's like you're dancing. It's like, hey, you want to dance? Like, how often do you ask the person's name when you're just dancing? Of course, he introduces himself. My name is Joe.
Oh,
so it's like, you know, these moments. I mean,
love it.
On a Tuesday at Trader Joe's, who cares? Oh, well, Trader Joe's. But I did not even mean to say that. But, you know, that doesn't, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, whatever. You know, there's a lot of Joe's out there. But it's in those moments that's like, just the precise moments that someone is there and they're named Joe that just.
That just reminds me, because I remember telling you about that. I had to call you right away because my son. So my dad, before, I think he knew, because he had so many heart problems that he was probably have a heart attack and die. So he had written, you know, things for my boys to open at certain ages or whatever. So
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. He wrote a check out, believe it or not, or I think it was money, or it was actual cash or something. He put into an envelope for my son when he graduated from high school. So my mom brings it, and it's very emotional. And my mom has also written him a check. So my mom gives him this check, and it is the weirdest damn amount. I mean, it's like $212 or something. I'm like, Mom, why the hell would you give him $212? And she's like, I don't know. You know, I was just writing. You know, Lori knows my mom. I'm like, okay, fine. And then so my son opens up this envelope that my dad had done, you know, like when, you know, who knows, 10 years before, and he opens it, it's $212.
Whoa.
I'm not kidding. We all like we almost fainted. Like the
she
whole
hadn't
room.
Seen it.
No, it was sealed. It was sealed. Yeah, and so we freaked out. All of us. We freaked out. Even Scott freaked out because he thinks we're just nuts when we do all this sign stuff. No, we were losing it completely. Yeah. That is weird.
It is interesting with your math brain. That's very logical. That you can also have this spiritual space and this ability to believe, you know, in these signs.
It's interesting because, you know, scientists, a lot of people think that, you know, they're atheists and, you know, but that actually, once they start looking into these mysteries of the universe and things, especially like quantum physicists and those guys, then they're like, whoa, 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 you know, there is something else going on here. So I can actually, so at first, my first thought is always to think you're insane. This is dumb. It doesn't make sense. But then, you know, I actually start thinking long and hard, and it does make sense. So it's like, it's weird. But yeah, the brain is, the math brain is tough. It automatically, immediately just doesn't accept things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So on that visitation note, if you want to visit me with winning lottery tickets and checks, that would be really awesome.
I have to make something happen for you as far as money.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a home in Hawaii.
There you go.
Yeah.
You think big, Stephanie.
I do. Thinking big.
It is interesting, though, to reflect on. If you spend time thinking about these and you know, how you can come back or how you can visit your loved ones after, does that play in? Is there, you know, the most prepared person gets to, is able to do that better? Or
that's a good
I don't
point.
Know. We have no way of knowing these things, but.
Yeah, but I would try my hardest to make it happen, though. I wouldn't be a person that would, you know, say, oh, I'm just going to stand back. No, I'd try to do something for sure.
You wouldn't be working full time?
I would be working full time up there. I have a job up there, some kind of engineering job.
You're going to create the law.
You'd be in weather.
Oh, you don't want to get into my obsession with the weather.
Ooh.
And maps.
Okay.
Look and see, Lori.
No.
Ooh. Okay. How about another card while we're ahead? Okay. Because this ties in beautifully as well. You got the video one?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
This is one of our multiple choice questions from the Duff Deck. And you know, as you played it before, you could have your family guess the answer to this. And you guess their answer, and then that way it creates more of a game element. But we're just going to ask you what you think, or maybe Lori, you can answer for her.
Okay.
Let's see if let's
why
see
would
if
we have Stephanie
can,
on?
Let's see if Lori can guess. Okay. Stephanie's
good.
Answer.
Good.
Making a video of yourself to be played after you have died is A, on my to-do list. B, something I would only consider doing if terminally ill, or getting up in years. Or C, creepy, sad, and downright depressing.
I actually go with C on this one.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
Is that what you would have guessed, Lauren?
No, because I think that's on your to-do list.
No?
No, because we talked about this a little bit about you know, your resistance to making videos, not knowing how to do that.
Yes.
And that's maybe why you've not accepted my offers to do so.
I freak out. Okay. That's scary. You know, when my dad died, I had to do one of those boards where you put the pictures on there, you know, from his life or whatever, and you show it in church. That was the worst thing I've ever had to do. It was horrible because you're just staring at all these pictures. Mm. It's making you sadder and sadder. Now, I'm more open to writing something.
Okay.
Definitely, mm-hmm. I could write things. That is, but doing the video, I just think it'd be too hard on them to watch.
Mm. But I think But then they would also love it.
You think so? God, I think they would
Lori put herself in that, I'm just going to watch every video ever of Joe. And
you did?
It was healing in a very deep and spiritual way. But sometimes she was just making herself cry, I think.
Yeah, you know, because when I put together the video for his celebration, but, you know, I come from a detailed production background, and I want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
So I couldn't leave it to somebody else to sort of pull those photos. So, you know, it had to be slowly.
I don't know how you did it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a number of months after he had passed.
It was a while.
It was 9 months between when he passed and when I had the celebration of life.
Because not that long.
I know. But pulling those pictures, yes. I mean, there definitely was a, you know, bittersweet moments. I definitely had to close the box and walk away a number of times.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it was very healing.
So, Stephanie, it sounds like you might be willing to do something like what your dad did in terms of writing letters for your kids to open.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm definitely willing. For some reason, the writing. And I think it would be much easier for them not seeing my face and hearing my voice. Mm-hmm. So just in my mind, maybe they would. I feel even weird just asking them right now. Hey, would you guys want me to record a video if I knew this was it? You know, but writing and putting, I think what my dad did was actually really beautiful. And he did it at certain milestones, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he wrote on there, not to be opened until you turn 21 or, you know, until, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. So not to put you on the hot seat, but you are on the hot seat.
I am.
Have you done any of these letters?
Oh, my God. Lori's going to be so mad at me. So Lori, in the very beginning, gave me a blue box. Okay. It was a blue box with a lock on it. And it had index cards in there. And I was supposed to be writing
those things. Thoughts.
Thoughts. Yes, exactly. Just
love
thoughts
it.
In there. I didn't do it.
Okay.
It now holds.
All right.
It now holds pot paraphernalia.
Well, you are putting it to good use. I appreciate that.
Something about memories and not having memories. Yeah.
It's got the pot pipe and a lock on it. It's because it has a lock.
I know. Well, okay. Hey. All right. I'm going to keep on you for that.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
When? Do you have a moment when you're like, this, I'll know this is the time?
You know what? It's going to be probably this summer because I will have another PET scan. I'm on this drug right now that we don't really know if it's working for sure or not. You know, it's kind of, that would be better. I'd be, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, so we don't really know. So I'll get another PET scan in the summer, and then we'll find out if there's progression or not. And then at that point, you know, I've really started, my options are obviously becoming more and more limited because, you know, after this much time, you know, you've tried a lot of treatments. So I have done other medical treatments as well. I've done a couple of chemotherapies, and I'm on this certain drug right now. And, you know, things start to whittle down. So my final card that I can pull is to go back and do more radiation because it's been so long, I can actually do it again. Mm-hmm. So, and I know it'll help because it helped the first time, but then once I do that, that might be it. So then I think this summer, once if it's progressing again, I think I'm going to have to start ramping up on like doing some of this stuff, the cards and going back into that mindset.
Okay. I'm going to help you with that.
That's great.
And I'm going to do some of my own.
You're going to do some of your, oh, good for you.
Wow. Perfect. Jeez. Yeah.
Well, along that vein, one of our other questions is if you could plan your own celebration of life party, where would it take place and what would be the theme? Have you thought about that? Like, what do you want to happen?
I definitely, like, so this is easy for me to think of for some, some people won't even discuss it, but I definitely want to be cremated. Mm-hmm. I definitely do not want to be buried. I'm a massive claustrophobic, and the thought of sticking me in a box, like, literally makes me insane. Like, it makes me think, of course I'm going to be dead, but still. Mm-hmm. Just the thought of, like, why would I want, plus, you know, with the earth the way it is, right? We got to be ashes. Anyway, my favorite place in the world is Yosemite Valley. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have them go up there. You're not allowed to scatter anything up there, I'm sure. But it'd be nice to have a celebration in the valley. I'd like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a lot. It would be, obviously, not a lot of people could come, but still, you know, it'd be nice because there's a beautiful little church there. And, yeah, so I'm sure a lot of people try that because Yosemite's a lot of people's favorite, but actually my husband's father is dying right now. And he's 87, you know, and we know it's coming. He wants his ashes to be scattered up at Tom's place, which is near Mammoth. It's kind of hard to get to.
Yeah.
He's going to make us hike our butts up there.
Like, he's going to make you work for it.
So then I started telling Scott, I'm like, well, I think you should be at the top of Half Dome. Like, get up there and hike that sucker again. Yeah, so, but.
So some people have a celebration of life that's separate from maybe the scattering of the ashes. Like, you know how Lori did the celebration of life for her husband, Joe, that was a very produced and specific for Joe, things that he liked and that sort of thing. Is that something that that resonates with you to have separate?
That would definitely resonate. I think because a lot of people wouldn't be coming to a remote location probably. Yeah. I don't have anybody in my life that does that. You know, that besides Lori.
Yeah, I was hoping a trip to Hawaii would be part of your celebration of life.
Because I am in these things as the executor. Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, so I
this is really what she wanted, guys. Sorry.
Had to go to Maui. Yeah.
This is tough on Lori, though, because I know you had there was a lot of issues with, you know, one side of the family wanting to do a very traditional religious Catholic ceremony. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want that. Because I don't feel that that's very spiritual. You know, it's very rote. Like a lot of stuff in the Catholic religion is just very rote. It's not spiritual. No one can talk. You know, no one can get up and say stuff about the person. And I feel like that would also be something I'd really like is be able to have like just a microphone and people to talk.
Mm-hmm. Share stories.
Just like a round table talk.
Podcast. Open mic night.
What's
podcast?
That?
Open mic night.
Open mic night. That's I'd love that. That would be perfect.
Can I be the MC?
I like that. Okay. That's funny. That would be great, actually.
Yeah.
Because I love that kind of humor. So that would be funny. Just have an open mic and just have people talk. That's it.
Now, would you consider having the celebration of life before you pass?
Mm-hmm. They call that a living funeral.
A living funeral. You can do.
That freaked me out right there.
Whoa. Oh,
yeah, I can see in your eyes.
People do that?
They do that. I mean, why? You might as well be there if they're saying nice things about you. I mean, some people really
think. But I'm going to be there anyway, I think.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll hear everything that's said?
I do.
Ooh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah.
But then you can't talk back.
No, I can't. That is true. That is frustrating.
Or maybe you can.
I know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to take somebody's body over.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. That's too weird for me.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I don't want to do that. But, yeah. Funky.
It's interesting. You have the opposite answers that I would have, but I am not facing a terminal illness. I'm going to die as well.
Right.
Who knows when.
Right.
But all of the things that you I would have answered differently because for me, it's in the abstract still.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
The whole point is it shouldn't be.
No.
It really shouldn't, but that's how we're wired. And
totally wired that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're as a species, we want to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your initial instinct. And we're going through that with Scott's dad because this is a man who you would not believe what he is such a survivor, that guy. Holy moly. Because he has, Lori's father also has, it's a CLL, it's a chronic leukemia that older people can get, but you can live with that for a while. You know, and there's chemos are very successful, and he's at it for 9 years and he's been having chemo, but now it's finally getting him. But this guy, I mean, holy mackerel, his will to survive is unbelievable. It's unreal to me. He does not want to die, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is just hanging on. But I really think, honestly, we had a scare a few weeks ago where we thought that was it. I think that would have been better, you know?
Than where he is now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because he's just not in a good place. It's awful to see him now. It's horrible.
But what does he want?
That's what we just talked. We were talking about that yesterday because Scott went down to see him and he does not want any type of intervention at this point. He's like, you know what? I'm just no more chemo, no more whatever. I think he's done because I think he felt like it probably would have been better too if he had just passed when they had the 911 situation. Yeah.
Is he in the hospital now?
So they moved him out just last week into kind of like a assisted living rehabilitation place. Yeah. I recommended that they should go over to hospice. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been better because I think you can manage your pain better, but. You know, the rest of the family's strange because people that you think would be like, let dad go, you know, let's let him gently go. And his brother, who would normally I would think would do that, is like, oh, my God, what's wrong with you people? Why are you even talking about him dying? He's not going to die. He's, you know, he's going to come out of this. And you're like, what?
That's how he loves. It's,
yeah,
it's
I
all
guess
different
so.
Sides of loving that person.
I was freaked out. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So. And that's an interesting segue because we had talked a little bit about this and you had a very interesting take on it, which would be the card on physician.
Do you think a person has the right to determine when to die if diagnosed with a terminal?
Totally. 100%. I'm such a believer in that. How can we let our pets pass that way? When you know it's time, you know, this. I don't want my pet to suffer and they have a beautiful passing. It's just an injection. Then they just die. You absolutely should have that right. 100%. I support that so wholeheartedly. And I don't think of it as, you know, being against God. You're going to hell. You're, you know, oh, my God, that stuff drives me crazy. Because why would you want this poor person, even if there is a God, you would not want he or she, you would not want this person suffering. You know, it's just not, that's not right. It's horrible.
Is it something that you would consider?
Yes, totally, totally, yes. And then Lori was so mad at me because she may not remember this, but very early on in my diagnosis, there was a documentary on it. And it is a beautiful documentary on a woman who had breast cancer. And she was probably in her probably 60 maybe, and she was in Oregon, and they've had the euthanasia law for a while.
How to Die in Oregon.
That was it.
On HBO.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
it was
wonderful.
You can
get it on Amazon, and it's not euthanasia. It's something slightly different. Because euthanasia, like with animals, they don't have a say, right? We make the decision for them.
True.
So I'm
yes.
just making that distinction because
yes,
it's really important. That, and that's why I was asking, what does your father-in-law want? What does the dying person want? Not what we want for them.
True.
Those are two very different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But that,
so it's called,
end of life,
medical aid in dying is the correct term.
And that's exactly what this was about. And so I was watching that. Of course, I'm like bawling and crying. And I
it's
called
tough,
Lori. Lori's like, why the hell are you watching that? She's just like, I'm like, I don't know. I got sucked in. But yeah, that was, and she was totally walking around and stuff. It wasn't like she was just, you know, in a bed in a hospital dying. She just knew and she was tired of everything. She's like, I'm done. And everybody else You know, she just did it.
And, do it my way.
Yeah. That's what
she
wanted.
Take some control. Write your last chapter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know, I'm totally.
Well, you're in a state where it is legal now.
Thank the Lord. Yeah, finally.
You do have to plan ahead, though.
But you have to. Yeah, really? I was going to ask if you looked into it.
In the sense of that the process itself takes at least a month. And so sometimes people are kind of.
And you must be of sound mind when you make the request.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's problematic. Mm-hmm. Two doctors have to sign off on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there is a process that you can begin. At least get line up the doctors and the paperwork. So it's
that's really good to know. Really good to know. Yeah,
because we see often with hospice that they come on to hospice and then they're like, "Hey, give me that shot now."
Yeah,
which
ready.
It isn't a shot. It's a it's medications that are given.
You have to be able to take it yourself, ingest it yourself. You drink it. So that is another issue that has to be in place for it to work.
So one of the important things is that when I talk to people who maybe. Are in situations like yours that say, I've been thinking about my mortality, I have this diagnosis, is to, you know, kind of begin researching it so you know, okay, even sometimes just having that in your back pocket to know that this is what I can do if I decide that.
That's actually, I'm so glad that you're telling me this because, you know, I haven't actually looked, I just watched that documentary. I don't know what California does. You know, all states could be different. But again, there's a lot. There actually is a lot of planning ahead, in and I know you tried to discuss some of this stuff with Joe, and he was adamantly against discussing a lot of these things. But it's so important because after the person passes or while the person's passing, everyone is so confused. Well, what does this person want? Oh my God, we forgot to ask. We know what's going to happen to her wedding ring. What's going to happen to this? What's it just all breaks down into chaos.
That's exactly why we're doing this. This is exactly why we wanted to talk to you. It's why we're so grateful for your honesty and the ability to ask you these things and get such graceful answers. I think we're going to have our first guest back pretty soon again.
I would love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Anytime. We're so grateful, if I can help Stephanie. Anybody, I would do it in a heartbeat. Yeah.
And we'll check in on you with the paperwork, see if you all the paperwork. The memos that you're supposed to write to your family, the prescription.
Lori's going to be on me.
We're on it. Yep, we're going to be on you.
Yeah.
In a loving way.
Yes, perfect. I don't mind.
Thank you so much for joining us, Stephanie.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And now before we go, it's time for a segment we're calling Exit Interview, where we speak with someone about the death of a loved one. How did it go? What was great? What did that person want that they did or did not get? We're going to kick it off with Lori LoCicero herself, and we got the perfect segue from Stephanie, our last guest, because she actually mentioned the difficulty that you had, Lori, with your husband Joe while he was dying, and when would be a good time to bring up a lot of these really tough questions that you needed answers, and he maybe wasn't willing to go there. So how long did you both know that Joe was dying before you could really start talking about, or how did you broach it when you first started talking about it?
Yeah, the problem was is that we didn't talk about it. When we had gotten the initial diagnosis that he had pancreatic cancer, which we all know now is a brutal, quick, you only typically find it in stage four, not a lot of survival rate. So, but at the time, neither one of us really knew what it was. I mean, we had to actually Google it and find out, you know, exactly, you know, what this cancer was all about. And at that point, I think that we both went into a naive denial that this was going to get him. And that was actually, you know, his motto is that this, you know, this is not going to get me.
Right.
And from some things that we had read on the internet, you know, the very, very fine print, because I kept searching for something that was less grim than all of the statistics that were out there. And at the bottom of one of the websites, it said, you know, these are all just statistics and everyone is different and everyone is their own statistic. And that also became one of his, you know, mottos is that I am a statistic of one and I'm going to beat this. And he was young and he was... you know, otherwise seemingly very healthy. It just sort of, you know, came upon us. So, you know, we didn't talk about the fact that this was a terminal illness and that he was going to die. So it wasn't until about 10 months into his journey with his cancer.
Knowing that he was stage four.
Stage four. Knowing he had gone through radiation. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, he was unable to get the Whipple surgery, which a lot of times will increase their survival rate. He was not a candidate for that. He had gone through a number of rounds of chemo. And actually, in one of those rounds of chemo, we were both there, and we witnessed a woman who was directly across from us, about 6 feet across from us, go into a cardiac arrest. And we sort of were stunned by this, and with the doctors running in and the curtains being closed, and as quickly as it happened, she was gone. The curtains were pulled back, and she was gone. And
wow.
To this day, I don't know if she died or not, but that was sort of that moment of mine where I realized, I think this could very well get him, and I need to prepare myself for the fact that my husband might die. So I tried to find a good moment, which there really is none at that point, to talk about it. And for him, he really did not want to talk about it, because he was the type of person that if he talked about dying, it would inevitably make him lose hope, and that would be it.
Giving up.
Exactly. So he was not going to do that. So I was on the same page with him. Up until that point of, you know, yeah, this is not going to get you. But after seeing that and after being in a clinical trial where it was not doing what we wanted it to do, I felt like, okay, we need to have this conversation. So I jotted down some questions and found a moment where he seemed more coherent. He was on a lot of pain medication and he would sort of go in and out of coherency. And he, between taking the pain medications, he would suck on these narcotic fentanyl lollipops to sort of treat the breakthrough pain. So I kind of knew those sort of cycles, and I kind of could judge, okay, so he's about to suck on that lollipop, and I know that he's coherent right now, and I can kind of have a little bit of time frame. So I sat him down on the couch with my laptop. I had my questions. You know, we approached a lot of the stuff like, you know, we're just going to talk about it as a business thing. You know, mm-hmm. we're just going to be
clinical,
straight.
Clinical, kind of.
Yeah. So I, you know, opened up the conversation of, you know, well, what if this does happen in 8 months or 8 years or, you know, 30 years? You know, what do you want as your final wishes? And he paused and then just started speaking directly, indicating to me that he had put some thought into it, and gave me some very direct answers about wanting a celebration, wanting to be cremated, you know, very detailed descriptions of, you know, what he would want in that celebration. I asked him a couple questions about the kids. It was maybe all of, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and then that was it. And that was the only conversation that we had about death and dying and final wishes.
So I know that obviously you don't feel like that was enough, and a big part of the genesis of the death deck and the questions and getting these conversations going. Was it enough for him?
That is a really good question. I think that it wasn't enough for him. But at that point, you know, it was too late. You know, we really should have had this conversation, these conversations, way ahead of time, way before the diagnosis. And even though we were young and in our 40s, I mean, these are conversations that people should be having. Part of the reason why I co-created this deck is that, you know, I don't want anyone to ever be in that same position that I was in. It was an excruciating conversation for both of us. As short as it was, I mean, it was awful. And I just, you know, would kick myself and saying, why did we not have this conversation when we did our life insurance, when we did our wills, you know, when we did our advanced care directive. I mean, we had all that. We felt like, oh, gosh, we've got all this stuff.
Which is great, which is more than some people.
Exactly. Yeah. But from that, I mean, and now even looking back on it, I mean, that is such the broad strokes. I mean, there were no details. I mean, it was very much just, you know, the standard paperwork of what you think that you do. And it wasn't until I was put in that position and had to deal with everything that I realized there's so much more. There's so many more details. And if he were able to go over those details, if we had both been able to go over those details so much earlier, I think that he would have been able to orchestrate a such better ending for himself.
So obviously you've had these conversations with your kids by now.
Of course. as much as is appropriate for, you know, to have a conversation with a kid. But okay, they know exactly where the big red binder is that mm-hmm. has my will, that has, you know, probably most important to them, my life insurance policy.
And passwords.
And all the passwords. I keep them posted on that. But, you know, going through this process, I've realized, well, but even that's not enough. I mean, I need to be even more detailed in what I want and how
exactly.
I would want it
you.
To be.
You.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the care and feeding of your kids so much as what do you want? What are the parameters you have for your last days? What's your threshold on pain? What's your thoughts on end of life? You know, if you were terminally ill and you had the option of getting a prescription to end your life on your own terms, what would that look like? You know, those, it's so important to distinguish between, you know, being prepared in terms of having your affairs in order and being prepared in terms of so that the goal here is what, that we can have the best death possible for ourselves.
Yes, because if you don't, those weeks or however long it is, you know, for us, it was 2 weeks and 2 days. That's what we had for hospice. Mm. And it started so chaotic. I mean, I was Googling hospice at that point. I mean, what is it? What are these? Yeah. You know,
what's, is it a place? Is it?
Yeah,
what
what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. So fortunately, I had Lisa, who came in as the hospice social worker, yeah. who helped Joe and I through this to explain everything. I got very lucky on that. But, you know, without that, I mean, we were clueless and chaotic. And it's not just the two of us, but it's then, you know, dealing with the children. It's dealing with family. It's dealing with, you know, what then happens thereafter. And to have that sort of pre-planned, you know, could have, you know, taken away all of that anxiety and stress about that part of it and allowed us to be more in the moment of, you know, transitioning from, you know, this life to the next. So he was not able to, I think, come to terms with that. And I think that's part of the reason why hospice was so long. I mean, he was in really bad shape when we originally called hospice, and that was kind of our deal. I mean, that was the thing. If it gets to that point where, you know, we know it's the beginning of the end, then, you know, if we call in hospice, then at that point we know that he was going to die.
So, dear audience, why we're doing this, why we're sharing all this, is that we wish for you the peace of mind, the level of peace of mind that Lori wished to have for Joe and that we all want to have for ourselves. So we're going to just keep on talking about it, right?
Yes, we are.
Stephanie, I was just wondering if you had any last words for our audience on this idea of peace of mind and what we can do for each other, for our loved ones, and for ourselves.
So I think the word that kept going through my head when Lori was talking was superstition. So I think a lot of us feel like if I start to just look into this process, or I look into, you know, start wanting to, how do I end my own life, or starting the paperwork, that's going to make me die faster. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people really have that superstition. Like if I start even talking about this, that's it. You know, that means the process is starting and I'm, you know, going to die somehow faster. It's insane. But I think I see that a lot, actually. It's really weird. Like, people just refuse. I don't even want to talk about that because, you know, it's not going to happen to me for a while, so long. Mm-hmm. But why not start it? You know, why not do it? I mean, we get life insurance. You know, we do things like that. Like Lori said, that's the perfect time.
Yeah.
When you're doing the life insurance. And I love this idea of the red binder. I just thought about that.
Do you not have a red binder?
No.
Oh, my goodness. But I'm getting you a red binder.
Oh, she's so getting you a red binder.
Oh, my God. I was freaking out thinking, yeah, you know what? Like, what? Who knows where any of my money is, where I've got, who knows what insurance I have? Mm-hmm. You know, geez, that's such a great idea.
Well, your organized mind is going to just nail it.
My mind just was going like, whoa, I got to get that binder going right now. I got to have tabs. I got to have But yeah, that's great. You know, but that's the worst possible reaction is to say, if I do any of these, take any of these steps, that's it. That means I'm dying. You know, but yeah, we're all dying. Hello. You know, no one's getting out of it.
Life is terminal.
That's right. We're not getting out of it. No one is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And so we have to actually, it's such a stigma, mm-hmm. You know, just talking about this, it's just crazy. But yeah, that if we all had these red binders and we all had discussions, that's why this death deck is, I just think it's so well done. I love the humor part of it. And I remember Lori started talking to, she was over at my house for dinner and started talking about this idea. And this is just a completely an idea, you know, and we thought it was the funniest thing. Was it going to be a game? And then remember we came up with that death deck name and thinking, is that too morbid? And right. I thought, oh, that's awesome. Got to go with that. But yeah, it's so awesome if we could get this out there. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to discuss mm-hmm. it because it is kind of, there's that injection of humor really helps.
Yeah. I think we're going to start a line of binders, right? That's coming. Stay tuned
death
for that.
Binder.
Coming up next.
I love that. Yeah, that was what we talked about. The second inception of this would be with the game, you have some sort of organizational
correct.
Tool. And maybe yep. discussions about the law in correct. California, things like yep. that we don't even
information
know.
Information we didn't know we needed.
There. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So stay tuned, folks. Lots more coming at you. Lori and Lisa, you guys are amazing.
Thank
I'm so grateful to be working on this podcast with you. Thank you for joining us. Talk to you next time.